Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Endurance Chat. I'm KiwiChris1709, and with me today is...
Sol Hames. G'day. Thank you very much for having me on this.
No problem, it's just the two of us today, unfortunately. Our usual host, Flood, is on assignment, but we'll hear from him later, because this weekend is the crown jewel of Australian sports car racing, and perhaps one of the best events in the world. The Bathurst 12-hour. And boy, am I excited.
Yeah, I know. I'm just so hyped. I almost feel bad for being slightly even more hyped for this than I was for Daytona.
Hey, I can certainly understand that. It's a totally different feel. Obviously, I was at Daytona, and you'll hear more about that in future episodes when I'm not jet-lagged. But... this Bathurst race, in this short space of time, from what, 2008 to now, has grown into an event which has got a massive legacy now.
Yeah, I know. Just a look at the entry list, the big names that this race continuously pulls year after year is, I think, testament enough to what it means for the global sports car community.
Mm.
And... but the reason I'm hyped more for this than Daytona is I was on and off with sports cars until Bathurst 12 Hours in 2017, and that race was my hook line and sinker. So
that was a bloody good race to get hooked on as well.
Yeah, and just sort of coming back around to Bathurst feels like coming home.
Yeah,
even
yeah.
Though it's half a world away from me.
No, I can totally dig that. Obviously, for me, this is a legendary venue, having been there myself and just basked in the glory of what is Bathurst, both for the sports cars and the supercars. It's an amazing venue. And we talked about the legacy. It's becoming a place where the international drivers want to come. You know, you speak to them in the paddock, they're like, oh my God, this place is freaking amazing. Why have I not done this before? And it's turning into a real bucket list race for everybody, not just Australian and Kiwis, which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, that's. I think once you have that on your CV, you're sort of doing something right.
Oh yeah, yeah, and it's the teams as well. Like look at some of the teams this year: Audi, you know, KCMG are coming with their Nissans, Mercedes, AMG are just throwing everything at it. It's the big teams are coming down with a vengeance. They want to win this race, of course, because it's part of the international GT. Championship as well now. Is that a little bit of extra impetus?
Yeah, and it's the one of three races that's been in it since the first year. So, Bathurst, Spa, and... yeah, California.
Yeah, California. Yeah, so Bathurst, Spa, California being the originals. Now, of course, adding Kyle Army this year.
And Suzuka last year.
And Suzuka last year. I think what makes this place special more than anything, apart from the history behind it, the absolute legacy of sport cars we're getting... is the track itself. It's a mad, mad place. And no matter how many times you've visited, no matter how many times you've driven it on sims or how many times you've watched it, it still is a track that makes your eyes just go, holy beep and beep beep, they race cars around this mad place. What the hell? So what's your favourite part of this track?
Hard to say.
Do you have just one?
No, not really. It's probably the track I've turned the most mileage on in a sim. Oh, I want to say Skyline, but it just doesn't say the whole story.
But there is
sort of
there's something magical about Skyline, though. Just the way the cars come over the hump at the corner before, sort of just out of nowhere almost, and drift in just slightly off throttle. Early morning sunshine, you get sparks, especially from the Mercs who run so low. Like watch, because obviously that's where we always watch from. That's where Flood will be watching from this weekend. But my favourite part is, well, if I just pick just one, it's the whole run from turn 1 to turn 23. But, had to narrow it down to one part, it would be the run from the S's down to the Dipper. Oh, sorry, the S's down to the Forest Elbow. Because you don't drive that. It's pretty much like a roller coaster ride. We're just holding off a grim death, not trying to crash.
And until you do.
I mean, you drive around at 60 k's in a road car going, holy crap, I can't keep it on the road. They're doing almost double that. Jesus. Yeah.
Race cars are just faster at a completely new level.
And as Flood's mentioned plenty of times, they literally just fall. It's not, when you get to the dipper, you quite often see cars go three wheels on the road, the left, right cocking up.
Yeah, because it's a cliff.
Basically, yeah. And then, of course, you got the run into the chase, which is just ball-tearingly scary.
Yeah.
Obviously, many an incident there, both in supercars and GTs, so...
Yeah. It's not flat in the supercar, is it?
The chase? Yeah. Very small lift.
Very small lift.
GTs?
So probably flat in a GT3.
GTs were probably going flat, especially the Audi, which will probably be a bit slower top end.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they'll be going flat through there. Basically, as soon as they're straight, slam on the brakes. One of the other cool things about this venue is the sort of trackside experience you can get and the whole atmosphere of the event. Now, even though he's not here recording with us today because he's too good for us, Flood's put together a little piece for us. Have a listen.
Yes, thank you very much, Kiwi. Unfortunately, I can't join you guys, but at this moment, I'm probably somewhere in the Bathurst countryside, which is great. But of course, that's because they've expanded from a three-day event now to a four-day event, which means now it's 6 days of travel attending the event and travel home again for me. So yeah, unfortunately, I couldn't be a part of this one. But I will share some stories and some of the things I think makes up the Bathurst experience in my mind. The first thing for me every single year, and this was especially true on the first year I went, the first thing for me is that first drive up to the gates. You come up the 4 or 5 lane road that heads into the track. You see the banner across the top, Mount Panorama, Bathurst, the circuit logo and everything. And then you look down the road and there's Murray's Corner, the Maguire's Bridge over the top of it. And then in the background, the top of the mountain with Mount Panorama Bathurst pasted on it. The first time I saw that, I had goosebumps. The hair stood on the back of my neck. It was a spiritual experience getting to go to this hallowed tarmac in Australia. And it's something that was so special, and it's special every single time that you get a chance to do it. And yeah, I can't wait to be able to do that again. And every single year, it's just one of those moments where it's like, damn, I'm here. And so you get up the top, you unpack all your stuff, you set up your camp. And then something that I've always done with you guys as well is walk the track. And it's astounding how steep it is. Like, it looks steep, but as the old cliche goes, there's absolutely zero comprehension of how steep it is until you are there and you are watching it before your eyes and before your feet. I think the first year that we walked it, I had road rash on the bottom of my jaw because my jaw was just scraping along the floor because I was that astounded at the steep parts of the track and just the track itself. Like, I didn't realize that it goes downhill all the way out of Forest Elbow to halfway down Conrod Straight. I just straight up didn't know that. The camera angle shortens that sort of elevation. But I think the craziest part was walking the cutting and walking the dipper. You stand with your feet shoulder width apart at these spots and on the apex of these corners, and there's about a foot of elevation change in the 60 centimeters, 70 centimeters that is your shoulder width apart feet. It's just crazy how steep they are, and they throw these cars down there. You don't fall through, you don't drop through the dipper, you fall through it, you plummet off the corner of it. It's crazy that they just throw these highly sprung GT cars around this track like that, and it's just fine. That's just the track. And it's just astounding. And walking back up is definitely a challenge, so yeah, be prepared for that if you're coming down and you're trying to give it a walk. It's not easy. It's pretty steep. Another thing about the track that I love is the fact that they have artificial spectator mounds around the whole top of the circuit, which means that from the cutting to the elbow, you basically have the best angles to take photos ever. And I posted some of my photos before on the sub, and I can't take photos this year, unfortunately. I don't have the DSLR with me anymore. But it's impossible to take a bad photo. The elevation of the track and the elevation of the spectator areas around the track just make it so easy. And it's just a wonderful experience being able to watch these cars plummet off the top of the hill or slide through McPhillamy Corner or crest the rise at Reed Park or get all the way to the wall at Metal Grate or, you know, understeer at Forest Elbow. It's just phenomenal. There's nothing that can quite describe that guttural sound and the visceral feeling of being that close to those cars on the very edge of the limit the entire time. So there's no bad spot over the top of the mountain, but I think my favorite spots are on top of the gates at McPhillamy. McPhillamy Park has these massive stone gates like right next to the track fence line, and if you're brave enough, or some would say dumb enough, you can climb up on top of them, and by gosh, you get a fantastic view of the cars coming over the hump at McPhillamy. And I kind of made that my spot now, so that's where I'll be watching the race. The other favourite spot is on the apex of the last part of the S's. You get to see them come over the brow at the skyline, which it's you stand at the top of skyline, you're like, how do cars just fly off this? How do they just not stick to the track? It's impossible. But you get to see them come off the brow at skyline, pivot through the S's, smash that curb on the inside, and then just gather it all up to go further down the hill. And I was there when a few of the cars hit the curb on the inside and got way out of shape, right when Van der Linde hit the wall. And I regret that I didn't have the camera out, but it was crazy. Just had the fine margin between, I think it was Verwiesch and the car ahead of him, doing almost exactly the same thing, and Van der Linde just pinching a tire, and then that being the end of his race. It was nuts. But one thing I do want to mention about the experience at Bathurst is the growth. In the short term, I've been going for the last 3 years, but we've had to modify how we go to the event just because there's so much more people now. The first year that we went, we set up our spectator gazebo the night before the race. So, you know, we were just kind of drifting around for the first 3 days. And then on the Saturday night, we're like, we want it to be in this spot. So we'll set up our gazebo there to make sure that we have it. Last year, that was the first thing that we did. We had to do that the first thing because there was already barely any spots left. The crowd has just increased in its volume and atmosphere so much that it's just become a big 4-day party now. It's really, really cool to sort of see. And I hope it's the same again this year. I can't wait to get up there on the Wednesday now and be fighting for positions next to the track because it is just going to be that big a deal. But I got to say, the biggest thing about the experience for me is the access. The first few years we went, we were able to see some of the drivers come up to the top of the mountain and just kind of hang out and watch some of the sessions. Because remember, this is a big experience for them as well. So, you know, we were talking to Stevie Johnson and Tim Slade 1 year. They were just sitting at the top of the mountain having a drink, just watching the cars go past in one of the morning sessions. I don't mean alcoholic drink. I just mean just having a glass of water or something. And we were just, hey, how's it going? Are you guys excited to get in the cars? And, you know, they're just so open and it's just such a chill atmosphere. But especially the GT stuff, go down to the pits and the GT teams, the GT drivers, they're so open and so happy that people recognize them or that they understand who they are. Because it is a bit of a rarity. Like Bathurst in Australian culture is very much all about the V8s. And so the V8 drivers get mobbed, but I was lucky enough a few years ago to sort of get in and talk with a few of these GT drivers and a few of these GT teams. And they're so happy that someone's like knows who they are and respects them. It's kind of cool. You kind of feel like you're in a little bit of a special sort of club where you're like, oh, I'm part of the International GT Knowledge Club. Like, one of my favorite stories to tell is when I ran into Bernd Schneider. He was just in streets at this stage with the team logo on it. I'm like, oh, it's Bernd Schneider. Cool. How are you finding it? You're running the Mercedes. It's not quite there with the BOP. And we were just kind of sitting there having a bit of a chat for about 5 or 10 minutes. And he was like, thanks guys. I've got to head out now. And thank you very much. And so he walked back into the garage and I was just standing there like, oh man, I just got to meet Mr. DTM. And these two Australian guys with the Holden Racing Team get up on them were like, that guy looked pretty important. Who was he? I'm just like, man, how do you not know Bernd Schneider? So I got the chance to teach these guys about who Bernd Schneider was and where these GT teams come from, which was really, really cool. Another one of my favorite memories is when I got to talk to Augusto Farfus last year. He was, of course, a bit of a big ticket guy after setting the pole time or one of the top times in qualifying. And I asked him, where does this track compare to like the Nürburgring, or like how do you feel about this track? And he just said, oh mate, well, he didn't say that because he's not Australian, but he said, oh, it's effing amazing. Just full on, just, he was just blown away by it. And we started comparing it to the Nordschleife, and he's like, you know what, I'd rather be racing here than the Nordschleife every day. And I'm like, wow, that's a pretty big call. But the thing is, a lot of the drivers say that. I mean, Ollie Jarvis took a temporary deal with Bentley so he could race at this event. And you ask any of the new drivers, they come here and they say that their eyes are on Storks and it's nothing like they've ever driven before. And for someone who's grown up as having Bathurst being just another, well, not just another event, but something that's so intrinsically Australian and so embedded in Australian motorsport culture and also Australian culture for that matter, it's always special to hear these guys who have driven on these international tracks talk about this track in such a high regard and be so blown away by it every single year. It's something that always is a bit kind of, it reminds you how special it is to have something like this in our own backyard. Well, our own backyard in relative terms. I mean, it's still 13 hours away from me, so relative terms. But again, like, you just, it's, people are so willing to talk to you. Like, I talked to Paul Dallalana last year and got an awesome photo with him just for 5 or 10 minutes, just talking about the GTM and the WEC and how he was finding the Ferrari and the Audi that he'd been driving in Daytona and at Bathurst, and just, you know, those sort of things. Like, they're so open to just have a chat. And I remember having a full-on brain fade. My brain just completely went to mush when I unexpectedly met Earl Bamber. I was just kind of walking down the pit lane out the back and just almost literally ran into him. Like, oh, Earl Bamber. Hi. It was like, he was super cool about it and everything, and I ended up getting a photo with him and a few of the other drivers later. But it was just, I had a complete meltdown, which is because I was so unexpected running into him. And it was just really funny the way that sort of stuff works. But on top of that, like, you get the media people, Graham Goodwin, the RLM crew that I've met, Johnny Palmer as well. I had a great chat with him at the pub at Bathurst. I also had the opportunity through going to this to meet some other Redditors. I mean, Kiwi, I've stayed with you before. That's how we met. I stayed with Redditworth Knight again. We met Stealth WEC a few years ago. Guys like Grusso, who's putting together a Spotters Guide this year. It's a big ticket event that really brings the Australian sports car family together in a big way. And it's growing year on year and it's getting better and better. And I can't wait to be back there and I can't wait to be in the thick of it again. And yeah, that is what I'd say would be my Bathurst experience. And if you are thinking about coming down to be a part of it, I 100% recommend it, because it is just something special. And again, it's like Australia's Le Mans or Australia's Nürburgring. It's one of those very special things that sort of brings everything together in the Australian sports car scene. And I can't wait to be camping up there in the top of Mount Panorama and being woken by the sounds of engines again. So I'll throw it back to you guys and share some of your own Bathurst experiences.
Okay, Fud, thanks for that, mate. Really good grasp of what makes this place so special. There's one other thing as well that I love about this place. Is it's really no terrible place to watch this race. He talked about the cutting and the artificial viewing mats from the cutting all the way around to the dipper and the elbow. What he didn't mention is you're almost standing on top of these really steep mounds, or in some places absolute cliffs. So you're looking directly down on top of the cars. It's a really unique viewpoint that you don't get in any other racetrack. It's literally the cards are at your feet.
Yeah, that sounds different to my experiences.
Yeah, because normally you've got a fence and acres of runoff, but this is literally fence, cliff, car, wall, crash, sort of thing.
question, when you're on the very top at McPhillamy, can you see the entire track, more or less?
No, because you're so far up, remember, you're 115 metres above the ground here, above Murray's Corner,
mm-hmm.
and the track's so big, so now you can't see all the track. What you can sort of see is from the hump through Skyline, through McPhillamy, down there's a start. You sort of see the cars drop away. In the distance, you can see Murray's Corner all the way down the bottom of the hill.
All right.
You've also got a big screen up there as well.
Oh, you've got like a TV screen.
You got a big TV screen up there as well, so you can certainly see what's going on other parts of the track. But because Bathurst is so big, you generally don't get those sight lines that you get at other places.
One more. Given that it's a rather steep mountain thing,
mm-hmm.
How much echo is there compared to something more open?
Well, you see, this is tempered by the fact that I was at Daytona last week and there was so much echo. The echo around the bankings is phenomenal. You don't really get that as much at Bathurst. You can certainly hear the cars roaring up, like from you can definitely hear them roaring up from the cutting. So the sound of roaring thunder coming up the hill. But because it is, you know, such a vast area, like this from top to bottom, and like as the crow flies, is about 2K.
Yeah. So Conron is about 1.8.
Yeah. So you don't have that massive, you know, that cauldron effect that you do get at other tracks.
Yeah, compared to something like an oval, which is A, walls, and B, actually rather compact.
Yeah. You have to think of this place as like a Nürburgring and Spa type thing, because of its vast size and whatnot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, it's about time we got cracking on the entry list, shouldn't we?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
Let's go from the top.
Yep. So there's 41 cars this year, which is a reduction of about 10 from last year, which is, you know, reduction of cars is always disappointing, and we'll come to that a bit later. But the quality we have in GT3 this year is absolutely phenomenal. We talked about at the start how teams are now treating this as a race they want to win, and this year is a perfect example of that. I mean, to start with, look at the two pro Audi teams that have come along this year. You got the number two Audi Team Sport Valvoline car with Chris Meese, Christopher Haas, and Marcus Winkelhock.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Not a bad first lineup. And of course, sorry, you go, cut you off.
Yeah, it's a bit stacked.
Just a wee bit. and of course, you look at the second car, the number 22, Calvin van der Linde, coming off a Daytona race, Frederik Vivesch, and local, now retired full-time supercar driver, Garth Tander.
Yeah, Van der Linde and Vivesch obviously are very, very strong drivers. Not much to say about them. We've all seen their previous achievements. And I haven't watched Supercars that much. How good is Tander?
He is one of the most ferocious competitive racers out there. Flood and I have a sort of love-hate relationship with him because we sometimes think he goes too far on track. But as a pure racer, he's very hard to top. You just know he's going to be fast. He's going to put that car in a strong position. And because this year he doesn't have a full-time Supercars drive, I reckon this is a race where he's got a point to prove.
Good point.
He's going to be absolutely amazing this race. As long as he doesn't bin it, and as long as he doesn't put someone in the wall while doing so. Also, in typical Australian media coverage, I can see Calvin van der Linde is listed as a Russian. Well done, guys.
It's not the only area in there.
Yeah, of course it's not.
There's a lot more than that.
Of course it's not. Moving on, so we have the number 27 Hub Auto Corsa team. This is coming in from Bahrain GT Asia with an absolutely stunning looking Ferrari. All Australian lineup in this car: Tim Slade, Nick Perkett, and Nick Foster.
Supercars guys, all of them.
Supercar guys, all of them. Very good supercars guys, all of them. Slade in particular has raced this Ferrari in Bahrain GT Asia, so it's not a definitely not a new car to him. Nick Foster is a former Carrera Cup winner down here. Obviously, he also races in WEC, or has raced in WEC in the past, in the Golf Racing Porsche. And Nick Perkett is finally reaching, or finally showing us what he can do in a supercar now that he's matured a bit. Driving for BGR, along with Tim Slade. So this is an absolute, and I think BGR giving some sort of support to this team as well. So this is a perfectly good lineup. Don't know if it quite has the quality of other pro teams, but it's definitely going to be right up there.
Thoughts
on that one?
Thanks for the insight. For everyone not anti-Bodian.
Which is basically 95% of our listener base. Let's be real here.
It's there.
It's there, yep. No, this is going to be a good car to watch. And it's damn sexy. All right.
Yeah. Car number 42, BMW Team Schnitzer, Augusto Farfus, Chaz Mostert, Martin Tomczyk. Again, reinforcing the point that everyone wants to win this.
Yeah. They're not stuffing around.
Farfus and Tomczyk are BMW's WEC full-timers, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And Chaz is full-time supercars and IMSA Enduro.
Yes, of course, he's coming back from a unfortunately disappointing run at Daytona where the team dropped the car while Zanardi was changing the wheel.
And just broke everything.
Well done, guys. You're playing 6 months for this whole having a driver with no legs business and you stuff it up in the first pit stop. Well done. But as long as we know Chaz is good enough to win this race, he's just made a couple of silly errors in the past, which has prevented him from doing so. And I really hope this is his year. I really do.
Yeah. He's very young, isn't he? So
he's still fairly young, and now that he, you know, his supercar's form is off the charts. He came fifth last year in a car that had no right to be anywhere near there. So he's a bloody good driver, and we know what Farfus and Tomczyk can do. So that's going to be a very strong Team Schnitzer entry.
Yeah, wasn't it Farfus last year who was in the opening 2 or 3 hours who was just pulling amazing laps?
The Beamer should have won last year if it wasn't for Chaz's slight issue coming out of the elbow. Farfus and Mozzie's first stints were just phenomenal.
Yeah,
couldn't do a thing wrong.
It was an amazing car. I went to sleep because the race is through the night for me. Woke up and saw that the Beamer was somehow not leading.
Yeah,
it was completely dominant during the first couple hours when I was watching.
Yeah.
I was, what?
Basically, what? Yeah. But yeah, no, this is one of the favourites, I think, this car here. Next car on the entry list is another car that is going to be right up there, let's be honest. Mercedes-AMG Teamcraft Bamboo Black Falcon. That's a combination in itself, which just makes you go, holy crap.
Black Falcon is a big name this side of the world, obviously. But Teamcraft Bamboo,
Asian.
More about that.
Asian. But they are also just, you know, combining these two teams is like, holy crap. Mauro Engel, Lucas Stoltz, Gary Paffett. Oh boy. Wow. Oh boy.
Yeah.
That's a who's who. People know Mauro Engel, Lucas Stoltz. They might not be so familiar with Gary Paffett.
DTM
Mercedes driver. I believe he won last year, if I'm not mistaken. I'm double checking that now, just a fact check myself. Yep, he, obviously British racing driver and Dutch Toyota Wagen Masters. test driver for Williams Formula 1 as well.
For Williams F1?
Yeah. Yeah, he won the championship last year.
Yeah, he won the DTM championship and formerly also a McLaren test driver, if I'm correct.
Correct. And despite Rene Rast's run of 6 straight wins to finish off last year's season, Gary Paffett came home by 4 points.
Yeah, because Rast had two early retirements in races which Baffert won, so that was 50 points that were hard to call back.
Yeah.
Lucas Stoltz is obviously one of the most promising young drivers. I mean, young, give or take, but...
isn't everybody young?
Yeah, pretty much. Rising drivers.
Yes.
Let's put it that way.
Yes.
And it's interesting to see Mauro Engel, especially in a pro Mercedes drive, given what happened 2 years ago.
Do we not? I'll just play the audio for that, because that was funny. I don't mind seeing him back in this car. He's not the same car as Gizzy, so that's not too bad. So this is the car, and we know that Mercedes is usually pretty good around here, if not quite right up the top. So if they get favourable BAP, I expect this car to be right up there.
Yeah, Mercedes also faster over the top than down the straights.
Yeah. There's two other Mercedes... Sorry, you go.
If it can get in front, that car has the potential to be a monster. Same with the Audi.
Agreed.
It's traffic and being behind other GT3s where I might see Mercs and Audis run into some issues, shall we say.
Indeed. There's two other Mercedes AMG cars, but I want to leave those till later because you'll understand why. Next cars on the entry list are the 107 and the 108 Bentleys. Two fully pro lineups, two ridiculous fully pro lineups. The 107, Stephen Kame, Jules Gounon, Jordan Pepper. And
Jordan Pepper, which is listed as Serbian.
Yeah. And the 108, which is Andy Sucic, Maxime Soule, and Vincent Abreu. They're not stuffing around again. And of course, this is going to be this race debut for the new Bentley, I want to say.
The new Bentley Continental.
Yeah. Because
it wouldn't have raced in
last year's Bathurst because it wouldn't have been homologated.
Yeah, it's 2018 homologations.
Yes. So it'll be the first year for the new Bentley, so I'll be interested to see how that goes. But again, they're not stuffing around. They never do.
I think no one is in this race.
No, no.
And that shows how important this is to everyone. And thank you. I mean...
Yes. Interesting.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's interesting how they haven't had much luck, these Bentleys. Obviously, you got the year they just pushed everyone out of the way in 2015. 2016, the year they just completely disintegrated. Like, physically, the car just fell apart throughout the course of the race. And last year, of course, they were involved in chassis issues. Is this the year that Bentley finally get it done?
All signs point to possibly.
This is like when you take the 8-wheel and go, yeah. But yeah, we don't just say anything about these Bentleys apart from they'll be up there, both of them. So R Motorsport, the next team on the list, in that beautiful Aston Martin Vantage GT3, the beautiful V12. They're bringing along one pro car this year, the number 62. Jake Dennis, Matthew Faxavier, and Martin Kirchhoff. That's a pretty strong lineup, don't you think?
Yeah, that's pretty okay. Mathieu Vaxivier obviously has been confirmed just recently as the Endurance Cup driver for Wayne Taylor Racing over in IMSA, among his other involvements. Jake Dennis, formerly of Single Seaters, raced in Blancpain with R Motorsport.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe is same driver for Red Bull in F1, but don't quote me on that.
We're quoting you on that.
And Marvin Kirchhofer, I have to admit, I don't know much about him.
He is one of the stars of the Blancpain GT campaign. He's only 24 as well. But yeah, he's fast. He's put that car on pole. Where are we? Yeah, he's put that car on pole last year. Raced with him 5 times last year. Pretty good. Very solid driver. Very quick. No Bathurst experience to my knowledge. and this is something we talk about quite a bit, is track knowledge here is a bigger advantage slash disadvantage than any other racetrack. Because there's so many intricacies to this track, knowing where to go and where to put the car makes such a big difference to your lap time.
Yeah, and also the fact that the margin for error is just so tiny, because from Griffin's Bend all the way to the elbow, there's just no runoff.
Basically, yes.
Except slightly at McPhillan, if I recall correctly. But yeah, tarmac, wall.
Basically. And then normally the racing line's right up on the wall. Like the middle grate, if you're not taking your mirror off the middle grate, you're not going hard enough. So yeah, our motorsport will be strong.
Yeah, and you mentioned track experience, which segues nicely into the next car. Number 888, Mercedes-AMG Team Vodafone, Craig Lowndes, Jamie Winkup, and Shane Van Gisbergen.
I don't know any of these guys.
Holy fuck.
Great, now I've got a sense of this. Thanks. But yeah, that's a pretty appropriate reaction, because this is basically Red Bull going, oh, let's win a GT3 race. Basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
For those who don't know who we're talking about here, we've got one of the fastest guys and one of the most flamboyant drivers in the series, is Shane Van Gisbergen. One of the legends of supercars. He's won more Bathurst 1000s than any other current driver. Freshly retired from full-time driving. And a seven-time supercar champion. In the one car! This is phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that if that car runs problem-free, we've just said about how everyone wants to win this race so much, but I don't think anyone would be angry with second place if this car runs problem-free.
Oh, it's, yeah. There's a couple of things I'll say about this car. Jamie hasn't done a lot of GT running. And Craig has never driven a Merc in anger.
Good points.
But the amount of track experience they have here, and the fact they were testing this car at Phillip Island earlier this week, I don't think that'll be too much of an issue.
Yeah, Winkup won this 2 years ago. No, Winkup and Lance together.
Yes, in a Ferrari, they won this 2 years ago with some guy called Tony Verlander. Tell you what, though. If this car doesn't win, the other Mercedes, the 999 Mercedes AMG Team Manfilter Groupon Racing, could as well. That's also an incredibly strong lineup with Maxi Book, Raffaele Marchiello, and Maxi Gotts.
I have heard those names before, which tells me they were all on the path. They were probably on the path to something like Formula One before.
Well, these are your drivers, like your typical Mercedes AMG drivers. Plenty of experience, plenty of just awesome talent. Speed, ability. Believe they've all got Bathurst experience as well. Raffaele Marchiello definitely has. He finished sixth last year. The other two. Actually, I think this might be Götz's first time. Yeah, Maxi Götz's first time. But even so, that car's pretty strong.
Very strong. They've both got factory support from Mercedes, right?
All Mercedes teams do.
Ah, right. All the pro teams have factory support, give or take.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Yep, as is Mercedes want to just go, oh, we want to win another race.
Yeah, because why not?
Yeah, basically. And this is probably the best chance, those two Mercedes. Although, having said that, it's 77 as well. They've got their three Mercedes lineup is absolutely fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, the last two pro cars on the entry list, EBM.
Yeah.
You know what EBM stands for?
Alabama Motorsports.
Mm-hmm. And these cars look gorgeous.
Yeah, they're all black with sort of kiwi details.
Yep, Moco on the front, kiwi silver fern, which may be covered up because of a sponsor, according to a chat I had with GG on the weekend at Daytona.
Aww.
But if not, it's going to look absolutely stunning. I mean, it looks absolutely stunning regardless, but yeah.
Yeah.
The drivers themselves are also stunning. 911, the 911, Roman Dumas, Sven Muller, Matthew Gemini. The 912, Dirk Werner, Dennis Dawson, Matt Campbell.
I'm actually surprised not to see El Bamber on there, but I suppose he's fairly tired.
Well, this is something that I was going to ask you about later. Having Daytona Bathurst consecutive weeks, there's a lot of factory drivers who would normally race here that we haven't this year. You guys like your El Bamber, your BMW drivers, apart from Chazzy because it's the same race. You know, your Tony Wielander. Got drivers of that caliber who aren't here this week because they chose to race at Bathurst last week.
They don't yet.
Yeah.
But haven't they pretty much always been like back to back?
At some point, there's usually been a bit of a buffer. But I think
them being back to back for the last 2 years.
Yeah. But I think this is starting to get to the point where teams are going, oh wait, we can't really have our drivers doing this anymore because it's just too much of a stress. Even journalists struggle with it. We struggle with it. Obviously, I've just got back from Daytona today, and I'm still jet-lagged as hell.
Yeah. I think there's going to be a buffer next year, but that buffer is going to be filled with a WEC race. So, probably no WEC full-timers, but possibly more of a buffer between Daytona and Bathurst, so you get your Earl Bambers and so on.
But I think it also shows that a lot of pro teams now are like, well, our driving talent is so interchangeable, we can just plug and play whoever we want, wherever we want, and we know they'll be bloody quick.
Yeah.
But when you consider the Porsche drivers that they have on tap, like Timo Bernard, Rene Rast, those type of guys who are not here this year, that's a massive loss to the Porsche lineup. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and I would agree even more if Rene Rast wasn't an Audi driver.
Shit. I meant someone else. So that's your pro lineup. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13? 13 strong pro lineup, all of which have a chance to win. Can you see anyone beating the Triple Eight? Because obviously that's what I'm going for.
Yeah, that's my fantasy WC pick as well.
It's hard to see anyone beating that car. But if anyone wants to do it, I reckon it'd be this.
I think 9, 12, 42, and maybe 27 are the cars to do it.
Yeah, well, the 9-12 is very much the young guns of Porsche. Dirk Werner, Dennis Olsen, Matt Campbell, they were all Porsche juniors who have just come on leaps and bounds in the last 12 months. Matt Campbell came second last year in a Pro-Am car, let's not forget.
That's true.
So we know this car is going to be competitive as all hell. But really, picking your winner out of those 13, good luck to you. It's really going to come down to track experience. And because the track experience the Triple Eight guys have, okay, not on a Porsche, but obviously between them, there's 20, 30, 40-odd Bathurst starts. 20 of which was one driver. So, for me, that's going to be the decisive factor. That's not to say drivers like Mies, Haas, and Winkelhock don't know this track. Engel, Stoltz, they've been here before. Book, Marciello. They've all been here before, but I just reckon those three Aussies, or the two Aussies in the keep. Why is Shane Van Gisbergen listed as an Aussie?
He's not.
They must have updated it from when Flood posted it.
They have.
Good. Otherwise, I was going to get really, really mad. But yeah, I find it hard to see that car being beaten.
Yeah, it's compelling, shall we say.
Yeah. Either way, it's going to be fantastic watching. And that's just the pro class.
We're not even halfway through the GT3 field.
Yeah. We'll get cracking on the pro-ams now. Audi are bringing two pro-ams through Audi Team Sport Melbourne Performance Centre. These names might not be familiar to many listeners of this show, so we might go through in a bit more detail. The number three has Pete Storey, Gordon Shedden, Matt Neal. So that's two touring car. I'm going to throw out the word legends. Yeah. Gordon Shedden's won three times, I believe.
So is Matt Neal, the BTCC.
Yeah, won three times BTCC. Matt Neal's also raced at Bathurst before with Paul Morris, and he's raced minis around here as well in an amazing four wide finish. And Pete Story brings the money to that team.
Obviously, because someone's going to pay for everything.
Exactly. And the number nine, the other Audi Sport team, our performance centre, Lee Holdsworth and Dean Fiore joining Mark Sini. Mark Sini bringing the money from, he's a property developer. Lee Holdsworth, very, very experienced supercar driver, who's got a new drive for this year, somewhat unexpectedly. And Dean Fiore, gun for hire in supercar land. You just know he's going to be quick. Mark Sini, he'll do a job. Whether it's a job on the car or a job on the track, who knows?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, this next car is possibly the favourite for Pro-Am honours. The number 12 Competition Motorsports McIlroy Racing. Kevin Estra, Jackson Evans, who I'll get to in a second, and David Calvert-Jones, who's the money man and a very quick driver. He's also Australian, although, like, he's Australian-American type businessman. He's a pilot. He's a helicopter pilot, among other things.
Man's just living life, isn't he?
Yeah, it's go drive helicopters, race cars. Yeah, why not?
But yeah, Kevin Estra, obviously the most recent Le Mans winner in GT Pro.
Yep. Absolute fantastic driver when he's not been in the car, which he's done a lot less of the last couple of years. Yeah. It's a lot less up and down. And Jackson Evans. Now, you probably have no idea who he is.
Absolutely not. Absolutely none.
He is the next up-and-coming Porsche superstar.
Matt Campbell Jr.
Basically, his season last year was as good as the season when Matt Campbell absolutely dominated the field in Australian Carrera Cup. He didn't win by as much, but he also had a stronger competition. And he has won the Porsche scholarship this year to go race in Super Cup.
The Porsche one?
You know how Porsche have the Porsche Junior scholarships to race in Porsche Super Cup every
year? Oh, the scholarship.
Yeah, he's won that. Shootout winner. So he is going to be the next up-and-coming star for Porsche.
Yeah. That's a pretty good lineup.
Yep.
You've got a WEC full-timer, an up-and-coming driver, and an experienced AM. I think you've got a very good Pro-Am package there.
Absolutely. I mean,
water is wet.
Water is wet. Now, this car has come second in the past. Last year came fourth overall with David Covey and Matt Campbell, Alex Davison, Pat Long driving. Actually, I'm surprised I haven't seen Alex Davison in this list yet. But yeah, this is definitely a car to watch this race. And because it's a Porsche, I know Flood's so excited about it too.
Alright.
Next on the list, next program, we'll go to the KCMG are back. The Nissan is back.
Godzilla.
Yeah.
And thank them very much for that, because that means there is a worldwide way to watch, but we'll get to that later.
Yes. Now, they're bringing two Pro-Am cars this year. Car 18, Alexander Imperatore. Wow. Oliver Jarvis. Wow. Paul Sitter from Daytona last week. Yeah. So you know he's quick.
Yeah, obviously.
And Edoardo Liberati. And then you get to the 35. Joshua Burden. Again, he's your AM in that car. Matsuda Sugo. Kazumasa Shio. Shio-san is back!
I presume they're Super GT drivers?
Well, Shio-san is just, you know, he's Nissan's driver. He is Nissan's GT3. Absolute fantastic. We all remember this couple of years, the 3 years ago when he won this race just by driving an absolutely phenomenal race. he is just quick. So you get Matsuda. They've also put his name backwards. He's been driving Super GT since 2000 for Nismo.
Yeah.
Very solid driver. Has won two championships.
Yeah.
So he's very much going to put that car up the front. He's also driven at Le Mans in the KCMG Orica, but he has plenty of experience in sports car racing and Super GT, so you know what you're going to get from him, and it's going to be very, very quick.
Yeah, they seem to have gone for a lot of reliability in both cars.
A lot of fast reliability, why wouldn't you?
Nah.
Now, I just want to check this Josh Burden guy, because I don't think he's necessarily an am in terms of the money side of things. Yeah, he's been racing in GT Asia. He's Asian Formula Renault champion.
Mm.
So he's definitely no slouch behind the wheel. He raced with Absolute last year, and he's living in China. He's no slouch by any stretch of the imagination.
So possible Super Silver?
I wouldn't say Super Silver, but definitely a reasonable driver.
Hmm.
So that will be one to watch. And KCMG, the cars always look fantastic as hell.
Oh yeah.
All right, next pro-ams on the list. We'll get to a pro-am Mercedes, because there's normally 1,000 of these in GT3 racing. The Griffin Corp Team 19 Black Falcon. So that's basically three teams combined into one. Christina Nielsen, Yelma Berman, and Mark Griffith. You probably know two of those names.
Wow. I know one and a half.
What, Mark?
I know Christina Nielsen, I don't know who Mark is.
Christina Nielsen, as we know, absolutely fantastic female driver. Coming off a slightly disappointing cat car campaign at Daytona. But it's great to see she's making the trip down here for this pro-am entry. Yama Berman, just a fantastic, fantastic guy. Drives the car like he stole it. Will be quick as hell. Mark Griffith, he's basically the money man. A lot of money. Hog's Breath Cafe, I'm pretty sure, was his venture, which is, if you don't know it, a really, really Australian steakhouse. Unlike Outback Steakhouse, which is a pile of crap. When I went there in the US, you guys you guys don't make cuisine. And he's usually very strong. He's basically had Mercedes teams longer than I've been alive.
Damn.
So this car will be right up there in contention for Pro-Am as long as Griffith can do his stints, because those other two are strong enough to put that car in a winning position.
An experienced two fast pros, I think. I think it's pretty much the combination in all of these Pro-Am cars now that I look at it.
Yep.
So, really, again, everyone really wants to win this one. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every single class is just going to be a treat to watch.
Oh, yeah. Next car on the Pro-Am list, the Mercedes... Oh, sorry. Next car on the Pro-Am list is Volkenhorst Motorsport, as always, bringing the BMW M6 down here. Nicky Katzberg in a Pro-Am entry, what the hell? Mikael Jensen and Christian Matthias Krognes, who's your cash man.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. I don't know why Nicky Katzberg's not on a pro car. You would have thought BMW would have found one for him somewhere.
I think they just ran out of drivers, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I suppose who are you going to replace out of Farfus, Mossad, and Tomczyk?
I mean, Tom Blomqvist has probably been bored right now.
true. But holy wow. Holy wow. Anything to say about those drivers apart from holy wow?
Not much. I'm just looking up Mikkel Jensen, and seems like a fairly strong driver without that's gonna do the job in the car.
Absolutely.
Don't say much.
He'll be fine. Next Pro-Am on the list, it's just your typical 51 car with Spirit of Race Ferrari with Paul Dallana and his bunch of merry friends. At this point, we don't need to go through this driver, because you know what Lamy, Matthias Lauder and Paul Dallana bring to any race. And it's usually a lot of fun, a lot of good humour, and a very fast race car.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
They didn't have the best weekend at Daytona, though, did they?
No, they didn't. Hi, Flood.
Hi, Flood.
How you going, guys?
Don't interrupt.
We've just finished the track walk and we're all ready to die.
you're joining us for the rest of the show, or?
No, we're going to go grab, jump into town and grab some food and then go to bed because we're tired, man.
Don't blame you.
Blood, just enjoy the great butt you're going to have after this.
Yes, it's been great already. We've already run into a bunch of people. And yeah, we're going to enjoy the weekend. I've already recorded a bunch of stuff as well. So I'll put together a little travel thing later on.
Ooh. Hope you do hope you do better than what mine's going to be, because mine's possibly going to turn out poor, but we'll see.
Sounds good. I'm also here with Reddit's Worst Night and Lada Safety Car as well. Say hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, guys.
Yeah, so we've just... This is Lada's first time at the mountain, so we took him for a track walk. And how'd you go on the uphill, Lada?
He's died.
But it's worth it.
Awesome.
You know what it's like, Chris. You've done it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. And just that first time, your eyes just open wide going, holy shit.
Yeah, exactly.
One day, guys. One day.
Yeah, you get your
soul. Yeah. We're going to head off now. So, yeah, I'll stop interrupting you. Get back to it.
Oh, good, man.
Bye.
Bye. Wait. Yeah, so the 51. We know it's going to be strong, apart from the poor... the poor Daytona weekend ahead.
Yeah, I mean, Dalana and Lamy are WEC full timers, so.
Mm-hmm. Well, they all are, and they just drive together, those three. It's just what they do.
Good point, yeah. Yeah, good point.
Now, the next car on the entry list is the Sun Energy One Racing Mercedes GT3. Tristan Vautier, Thomas Yeager, and Kenny Hubbell. Kenny Hubbell. Is your GT challenge?
Hang on. That's changed. It's not Tristan Vautier anymore. It now says Dominic Bowman.
Well, that's not a bad change.
All right. Shall we start 75 again?
Yep. Right. So yeah, the next car on the entry list is 75 Sun Energy One Racing Mercedes. Late change to this lineup. Driving with Kenny Hubbell. Yes. Last year, GT AM champion. Thomas Yeager and Dominic Bowman. Holy wow. Not a bad for a late replacement.
Yeah, no.
We know what these guys can do in the car. We know Kenny Hubbell. As long as he keeps it clean, he'll be up there. What do you know about those guys?
I completely lost that sentence.
So did I.
Sorry.
What can you tell me about those two pros?
Yeah, wow. I'm honestly just... Sorry. I'm a wreck. Hang on. Can I have a minute?
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm decaffeinated and...
Of course, so I'll pick it up. So these lineup is absolutely phenomenal. Kenny Hubbell, as long as he doesn't crash the car, he's normally pretty good. He's really impressed me the last 12 months with how he's gone about his driving. And the car, because it's of the sponsor, is going to look pretty phenomenal. That blue and orange livery usually stands out from the crowd. Thomas Yeager, he's actually won here before. 2013, he won the Bathurst 12-hour, driving in the Erebus Motorsport car, alongside Bert Schneider.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And Dominic Bowman, he's a young bloke. He's not the German footballer, thank you, Wikipedia. That's the page I was after, you idiot. Dominic Bowman drives for HDP normally. Usually pretty good, pretty solid driver. Came third in a race at the Nürburgring last year. He's finished second overall in Blancpain Endurance in 2016. Knows how to point a car. Coming off a campaign with P1 Motorsport in the Mercedes at Daytona, where they had a few problems. Drives in a Lexus in that series last year. Where he actually won a couple of races, actually.
Yep, finished fifth in the championship, if I recall correctly.
Yep, so he's very solid. Very, very solid, actually. So I'd say pretty good things from that car. Do you agree?
Yeah. The Prime class is really shaping up to be a treat to watch.
So. Yep. Yeah, indeed. Two cars left in the Pro-Am class, both of which are pretty strong entries. The 540 Black Swan Racing, absolute stalwarts of GT Yam Racing, and they're becoming stalwarts of this race as well, and a beautifully turned out Porsche 911. Tim Pappas, as you would expect. Jeroen Blekemolen, as you would expect. Mark Lieb, as you wouldn't expect, but holy crap, what an addition he is.
Yeah. I think we've gone to about through about five super subs by now, and it's just wow.
Yeah, we know this car's usually incredibly strong. Last year, finishing third overall, with Luke, they had Lucas Stotz in that combination as well last year. But we know what these three will bring to the car. Anytime you can bring a Pro-Am car to finish third overall, and Tim Pappas is not the slowest silver in the world, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true.
They're very experienced. He's finished fourth at Le Mans for Pete's sake.
Exactly. So, like,
there's really not much more to say about that team except holy wow.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Last
super sub after super sub. This is we've got two more Pro-Ams.
One more
760. Two.
Oh, sure. Oh, yes, right. So yeah, two more Pro-Ams to get through. The 760 Pro-Am from Motorsport. Florian Kalmiga, Andreas Banziger, Matt Parry, Peter Lemus. Now, Matt Parry we all know from the GT, what is it called again? GT Sport program that Nissan GT ran. He came through as a gamer. Very solid silver driver, that guy. Peter Lemus, again, very solid businessman Australian driver. Will keep the car pointed in the right direction. May not be the quickest on track, though. And then Florian Kamiga and Andreas Banziger. They're Swiss. I'm going to put a Swiss. They're not slow, but you can join the dots there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't expect too much from that car, but at the same time, wouldn't be surprised if they pull out something and get a half-decent result.
Yeah. Obviously, in any endurance race, but especially one like Bathurst, where the margin for error is so small, having drivers that are reliable enough to keep the car out for the duration of their stints is fairly valuable, shall we say?
Just a wee bit. As long as those Swiss drivers and Peter keep it clean, Matt Parry will come along and try to put it into a decent position. That's how I see that card treating this race.
Yeah.
At this point, I should come back in while we're editing. We noticed that we forgot a car, and that's very amateurish of us. So I will talk about the Matt Stone Racing Machine, the number 98, because this is, and Pro-Am Audi, that's a real chance of a good result here. The car is owned and run, was being run this year by Matt Stone Racing. The supercar team and Super 2 team, so their supercar driver Todd Hazelwood is driving it this year in the for his first 12-hour start, being teamed up with David Russell, who has been around driving this longer than many anyone would care to remember. Very solid co-driver at the Bathurst Enduros, knows how to drive for this track and will do a very good job. And Roger Largo, one of the best amateur drivers we have, one of the best, just passionate Audi drivers. He'll do this car justice as well. So this is going to be a Pro-Am entry well worth watching.
And we're on to number 777. The Band Motorsport Bark.
Yep.
Fod's going to love that one. With Yasser Shahin bringing the money, and David Reynolds and Luke Yulden, who are supercars drivers, which I've heard quite a bit about.
Yes, I'm not surprised you've heard quite a bit about, because those two are bloody good supercar drivers. Obviously, teammates at Erebus. They won Bathurst together. Yasser Shahin, he is the bend.
Yeah.
So as long as Yasser Shahin doesn't bend the car, which he does tend to do from time to time, Reynolds and Yeldon in a Pro-Am car are going to be competitive as hell. If there's any year we can see a Pro-Am on the podium, and we've seen it in the past, don't forget, that could be the, that would be the one. Bloody strong lineup.
There's just the question of, you know, David Reynolds or his body enduring.
Well,
1,000 flashbacks to anyone?
Did you have to bring that up?
Sorry.
Jeez.
I really like him. You
know. I'll kick you from the voice channel. So pick a winner out of that lot, would you?
Shall we go on to the outcast now? Picking a winner is going to be hard. I want to say 777 or maybe Walton Horse, but...
But again, this whole race is pretty much get a random number generator and see how you go.
Pretty much.
I reckon it's going to be between the 12 Competition Motorsports, Jackson Evans, Kevin Estra.
Oh, yeah.
The 35K CMG and the 777 Reynolds Yield and Shaheen car for Pro-Am honours there.
Yeah.
That is going to be absolutely phenomenal racing as well. And because they're GT3s, it's not going to be that far off the pace either. And we've seen them in the podium in the past, so you never know. We're talking about the AM cars on the entry list, of which there's only three now. Of which there's only three AM entries. So if you finish guaranteed, congratulations on your podium.
Yeah.
Starting with the car number 6, Lamborghini Huracan. The Hypno car, if you've seen the livery.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. The Basque one.
Yeah, basically just red and white concentric circles. Good luck with that, if you're watching that. drivers, Adrian Dietz, Julian Westwood, Cameron McConville, Tony Dalberto. That's a very strong AM lineup.
Yeah, it's almost as if like they're skirting driver ratings. I mean, this is...
Well, Cameron McConville and Tony Dalberto are only silver because they're not racing full-time. Yeah. They're both good enough to be higher than that if they race full time. Adrian Dietz, he's just an up and coming driver. Races Australian GT. And Julian Westwood, he's old. He's 51. He's as old as my father. Wow. But he's won GT3 AM. He's won, like in blank pain, he's won plenty of races in the past. He's raced all around the world. While he might not be the quickest driver anymore, he's still going to put that car in a very competitive position. And those two, Cameron and Tony Dalberto, are just bloody good drivers. Lots of experience around Bathurst, so I fully expect that car to win AM. Until you get to the car 29, Trofeo Motorsport, Jim Manolius, Ryan Miller, Ivan Capelli, Dean Canto.
Damn.
Yeah, damn. Jim Manolis, he's a Aussie GT owner. He owns a series now.
Really?
Yeah. And he's just a good solid race car driver. If not old, which you'd have to be to have enough money to own a racing series.
That's a good point.
Dean Canto, the bald bugger, is just a gun for hire. Knows his track like the back of his hand. You know what he's going to do. He's won Bathurst before. He's driven with Mark Winterbottom for so many years.
That's why I know the name.
Yeah, and driven usually pretty quickly as well. Ivan Capelli. Do you recognise that name?
Yeah, I've heard about him.
And he should have, because he's a Formula 4 Formula 1 driver.
Yeah, no. almost won a race back in 1990, I believe. In a midfield to back my car.
Yeah, in the Leighton House, full cars.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's been around for years. And just always seems to pop up at Bathurst. I don't know what else he does during the year, but Bathurst just seems to be always on his radar, and he just loves racing.
I mean,
he's
got the time, he's got the money.
Yeah, why not? He's also commentates on F1 for the Italian TV, so it's off season, why not have some fun?
Yeah, pretty much.
So yeah, I would expect that car to be contending as well, as long as Ryan Miller and Jim Manolius keep it fairly well pointed.
I've gone Ben Porter rather than Ryan Miller on the entry list.
Oh, that's changed. Okay. Ah, that's Am Aussie for Am Aussie, whatever. And now the last M car on the list is the number 29 Trofeo Motorsport. No, it's not. I just mentioned that one. You dickhead.
It's the number 11 Objective Racing.
Yes. Tony Walls, Warren Luff, Andrew Watson. The only McLaren in the field this year, which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah, I know. I love the car. And it's also the McLaren 650S's last race.
Yes, it will be, because you're going to the Mad 720 as of next season.
The quote-unquote GT3.
Let's not have this discussion again.
Alright.
The 720S is a fantastic car. I won't have anything else, as long as they get their drivetrain sorted.
Yeah.
But Warren Luff, another gun for hire in the Australian Supercar Championships. Andrew Watson, Blancpain guy, knows how to drive a McLaren. This is their factory McLaren driver in the Blancpain series. Tony Walls, he's been racing an Objective car, a McLaren for a Lambo, for years. Absolute years. He just knows his way around the car, knows his way around the track. Again, is not necessarily the quickest guy in the world, but he will keep it clean.
Yeah, and I'm just having thoughts of him actually helping to repair the car when it breaks.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, if he knows the car that well, you wouldn't even put it past him.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the sort of guy he is too. So that's the three-car AM lineup, and that brings us to the end of the GT3 field.
Yeah. Completely. Which is rather big.
Rather big, rather stacked. It doesn't matter what we're talking about, AM, Pro, whatever. There's just amazing talent sprinkled throughout that field. It's one of the greatest things about this race is picking a winner is so hard. So hard.
Impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's so many other factors apart from, you know, how's BAP going to work? Will the wars come out and bite you? What freak events will happen at the track? You know, it's just so much to it. Now, this is a perfect time to have a chat about this race going forward. As we mentioned earlier, we've lost 10 entries this year, but GT3 has stayed about the same. So our losses have come from the lower classes, which we'll go through now. But before we do, I want to play you this that Flood recorded about his thoughts about the entry list.
Okay, I'm going to jump back in and interrupt here because I want to make a point. I want to ask you guys something. I want to start a discussion. So this year, we have a reduced entry list of 41 entries compared to last year where we had 51. Last year, 23 of those entries were part of the lower classes, B, C, or I class. But this year, only 13 entries are part of the B, C, or I class, the Carrera Cup, the GT4 class, the Invitational class. So the question I want to pose is, are there too many GT3 cars? Has this become too much of a GT3-focused event? Remember, of course, the Bathurst 12-hour used to be primarily a production car event. There used to be only a handful of GT3 cars 10 years ago. Now, I guess it's because it's an IGTC event, and there's much more of an emphasis on the GT3 aspect with the SRO involved, and pro-am and amateur classes. But of course, a lot of the character of the event comes from the B, C, and I class. We have the Mark cars. Mark cars are one of the coolest things, I think, in existence. They're endurance kit cars. We've only got four of them turning up this year. We don't have the Daytona sports cars at all this year. One of the staples of the Bathurst experience, watching this 60s-styled sports coupe blitz past the GT3 cars on the straights and then get rounded up in the corners, or the old competition Viper with the beautiful blue stripe on the white body. We don't get to see them this year. They're not there. There's only a few Carrera Cup cars, and the GT4 field hasn't grown to step into that space. The question I want to pose is, does it matter? Why would people be angry at this? I mean, I'm angry at this. Angry is probably not the right term. I'm concerned by this. I think that the character of the event is very much stylized by these lower class cars. Remember, racing at Bathurst is a special thing no matter where you're from, and especially for Australia, there's only 4 weekends a year that they close the track for racing. So to reduce the opportunity for these guys to race on this track is a big deal. But on top of that, I would hate to see the Bathurst 12-hour become another homogenous 12-hour or endurance GT3 event where the only cars on track are GT3 cars and it becomes a blank pane international GT3 event, which is the same as the blank pane GT3 race, 24 hours of Spa, or the, you know, just another GT event where everyone's in the same class, the only difference are the drivers, and there's just so much homogeneity. I love seeing the differences here, and I think one of the biggest aspects of the Bathurst 12 hours has always been passing traffic. I mean, Bathurst is a unique track. It's kind of like the Nürburgring, but with less margin for error, and so passing traffic is a big deal, and the fact that we have less traffic in terms of the lower class cars kind of cheapens it, in my opinion. And I hope we don't see these classes go away. I'd love to see an increase in the GT4. And if you do have to get rid of the B class, the Carrera Cup class, or you do have to reduce the impact of the Invitational class, at least do what you can to bring the GT4 cars in. Because if we have just another homogenous GT3 event, then really, what's the point? So what do you guys think? Am I right? Am I crazy? What do you guys think?
So you had to listen to that. What do you think?
He does make a good point. It actually reads a lot like ethnologists talking about how local languages are dying out in favor of more regional languages and ultimately English. And I don't necessarily think that it's a bad thing in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand that it does take away some of the charm from the race. And the fact is that GT racing right now is a bit top-heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You've got GT3, which is affordable and widespread and am friendly, and as a competitor you don't have much incentive to field a GT4 car or a cup car when for not that much more money you can step up into a GT3 car and compete for an overall win.
Well, for me, there's so many races around the world which are GT3 only, right? Or GT3/GT4. Having classes like your Carrera Cup, your Mark cars, or your Class I's add so much to the race. Especially at Bathurst. Like the early days of Bathurst, classes were split by price.
Really?
Yeah. Like in the 60s, 70s. So races, so you, how much you spent on a car didn't matter. Because there was going to be a class, whether you paid £1,500 or £3,000 or £6,000. You're still going to race at Bathurst and still be competitive for a class win.
Yeah.
The problem is GT4 hasn't picked up like I think Australian GT would have hoped, with only 4 confirmed entries so to this point. Organisers have put so many restrictions on Class I now that teams like Daytona, they've sold their Viper, they're selling their Viper, they've sold their Daytona Coupe. They've got a new car, the Sin, which, if you don't know it, is an absolutely mad car from Romania.
Romania.
I think it's Romania. Oh, some Baltic state. But they can't run it under the regulations that are being given to them because the air restrictor would be too small. Oh, sorry, Bulgarian. Bulgarian car.
Bulgarian.
The Sin R1 race car has an... I think they've got the LS7 in there, which is a 7-litre V8. Ah. You know.
Nice.
So, understandably, they're like, if we don't get enough air into this engine, the car might just go boom.
Yeah.
So they've... So you can understand their point of view on that one.
Yeah.
But it is a shame that we lose this other element. Like, Carrera Cup is just disappointing this year in the class terms. In previous years, what they've done is they've said, okay, Carrera Cup cars, for the first hour, that's like a round of your championship. So wherever you finish at the first hour, you get points related to that. You can then choose to continue for the full race or come into the pits and finish your race there. So whether they need to do something like that again to try and encourage those Carrera Cup guys back in. Because the speed differential between the Carrera Cup guys and GT3 is not massive.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So your safety concerns aren't necessarily there.
Yeah.
As it would.
But, yeah, but again, same point. If the speed differential is not that big, why would you pigeonhole yourself into what's now a three-car class? Rather than step up into GT3. Like, how do you incentivize them to run a lower class?
And I guess that's a question that people need to work out.
Yeah, because I don't see a class higher than GT3 being introduced. They're fast enough already.
GT3 is almost too fast for the track.
Yeah. I meant more on the global scale. But
on the global scale, no, definitely not.
You've got GTE, but that's restricted to basically manufacturer programs only, and I don't see that or anything like that ever coming to Bathurst because, as you said, in the early days, the class was split by price. So it's obvious. There's obviously a huge emphasis on cost control.
Yeah, as it needs to be. Let's not forget we've had GT3s on the same track as Fiat 500s in the past at Bathurst. So we've had that speed differential before. The track can handle it. So I'm just not. It takes smarter brains than I've got to work out how to fix it.
TCR?
Well, we've got TCR Australia starting up next year, this year. So it'll be really interesting to see how that goes. Because that could potentially... Because they're at GT4 pace, roughly?
Bit slow, if I recall correctly. Yeah.
But they could potentially come along to this race as well. Depending who enters that. And we're talking teams like Gary Rogers, Jason Bright potentially entering as well. So we're talking big names taking interest in TCR. And looking at what they can do in that series. So if that takes off, and there are signs that it might, then who knows where it can end up. It could be a viable alternative, or a viable addition, as a Class E to the race. Yeah. But then you enter the possibility of, does everyone get a medal for participation? You've got that many classes, the talent's been so fit, you end up with a Kreventic-like race.
Yeah, pretty much. That's also a very good question.
If you've got any thoughts about what we've said or any thoughts about the class structure, get in touch with us because, hey, we've got a Facebook page now. Just look for Endurance Chat on Facebook and leave a comment on this episode and we'll have a chat. And we'll, if you like what you say, we might even talk about it in a future episode. On that note, we should talk about these lower class entries because they're definitely interesting in their own right. And... even though there's not that many of them, it's still going to be fun racing in those classes. We'll start with Class B, the Porsche Carrera Cup car. So these are all 911 GT3 Cup cars, all current spec. Normally this class is a case of Grove buys his way to a victory, and that could happen again this year. The number 4 Grove racing car, Stephen Grove, Brenton Grove, Ben Barker.
Yeah.
This is the team that absolutely killed this class completely dead last year. Same driver lineup too. Won by... Where are we? That's Spa results, you idiot. That's not going to help you at all. Won by 3 laps in class. Finishing 17th overall. In the past, this team, or this car, has won the Bathurst by... I worked it out. About 300 Ks. So
Jesus.
Yeah, that was the year that they had Scott McLaughlin and Earl Bamber in the car.
Because why not?
Because Grove throws money at them and hey, it works.
Yeah, such is life.
Yeah, so this car you'd expect to win the class, but it has a bit of competition this year, even though the class is only three cars. The Team 23 Team Carrera Cup Asia, Chris Vanderdrift, Paul Tresider, Jinglong Bao, Philip Hamprecht, who's listed as a is that the flag of Guernsey?
I think so.
Yeah, Guernsey. Not many Guernsey drivers around. Anyway.
Yeah. You want to fill us in on who they are?
So Chris Vanderdrift, GT Asia, has driven an endurance campaign in the past in the supercars. Very solid, if not spectacular, driver. Paul Tresider, if memory serves, he's your Australian GT guy. Porsche Carrera Cup as well. Very, very solid. His name just keeps popping up. I should mention Chris Vanderdrift won the championship last year in Carrera Cup Asia. Philip Hamprecht came second in the championship last year. It's the same for the Hamprecht because he's actually a German, not a Guernseyan, as the interest would have you say.
Yeah, I was going to say something was off.
Something was off. That's why you use three-letter codes, not two, for your flags. And Jinglong Bao, he's another Carrera Cup Asia guy. All these guys are, basically.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, if they're sponsored by the series, why wouldn't they be? And Jinglong Bao came 10th. So it's definitely a solid GT Asia car. Whether it's the quality of Ben Barker, I highly doubt.
As you said, getting past Grove is going to be difficult. But
yeah, we should mention with Grove because Stephen Grove, he's one of the fastest ands we've got in Carrera Cup. Brenton Grove is driving Super 2. And I'm pretty sure that's Super 2 for Red Bull Racing this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, you know. Certainly not a terribly regarded driver. Driving. So it could be endurance honours for him if he keeps going the way he's going. And obviously Ben Barker. The last car in this class is the 43 Ash Jewett Motorsport car. Danny Studdard, Sam Fillmore, Richard Muscat. I'm guessing you know none of these drivers.
I've heard of Richard Muscat as an Enduro Cup driver in supercars, if I recall correctly.
Enduro Cup, he's also raced GT3. Usually has raced in the Mercedes in the past. Very, very comfortable with the way he goes about his business.
That's good.
Finished eighth at Bathurst this year with James Golding in the supercars.
Oh, that's not bad.
That's not bad at all. He won the GT Championship in 2014. So he definitely knows how to drive a car around this place. And the fact he's in B-class this year is surprising to me.
Probably just wasn't enough room in GT3 anymore.
I think that's a problem with this race now. There's so much competition. There's people like this who are driving in lower-class cars. Danny Studdard, he's your typical Carrera Cup Australia driver. Not fantastically fast, but not the worst. Has won GT3 Cup Challenge, which is sort of the, what would you call it, like off-Broadway Porsche Cup class? And more towards your slower, your Pro-Am, your Am type drivers. And he's won that. Sam Fillmore, he's basically your businessman, brings the money, races in New Zealand motorsport. I've seen him racing utes, seen him racing other things. Has finished third in class before in actually cup cars.
Mm-hmm.
Races.
How many?
Well, that would have been five last year. Third of five. Mm-hmm. Race Australia GT Trophy, which again is GT for AM drivers. So it's not the worst AM in the world. But again, when you've got Ben Barker in this class, it's a case of, well, good luck to you.
Yeah, pretty much.
So on to our GT4, our C class at this event. What are we, seven car entry for this one? I've got the entry list again.
We've got, the entry list says six.
Six cars.
Six, but I'll just quickly touch immediately on 55 and 56 Jeanette Australia cars.
Yeah.
The entry list has them as drivers as to be confirmed on what is Wednesday evening.
Considering track action starts tomorrow.
Yeah, I think not.
Since we recorded this, Jeanette have announced that they're going to have one car for this race at Bathurst this week. Driven by Bradley Schumacher, team owner of Jeanette Australia, no relation to them, Michael. James Vernon, who's an Australian up-and-coming racer, races a bit in lower-level motorsport. Young bloke, 20 years old, has a dodgy moustache. And Carl Reindler, who's very much at the other end of the scale, vastly experienced, and will probably act as a good foil to the young bloke. But we should talk about the cars we do have, because the cars we do have some quality in them. Starting with the number 13, RHC Haugenson Strom by Mark GT. Darren Eric Haugenson, Britt Strom, Jared McLeod. I like this lineup. I really do. Jared McLeod, he's raced V8 Utes, V8 Super 2. Very solid Australian under series driver. Britt Strom and Haugenson, They just race together in BMW uniforms everywhere and generally do very well in the races they race together. I've seen them in Blancpain, I've seen them in all sorts around the world, so I'd expect that car to do incredibly well. We've got two KTM.
That's
a very strong lineup.
They might have started life in racing as sort of just friends who got together and stepped up to GT4. Is it true?
Basically, yeah. They're just two mates that said, we're bored. Let's buy this VT BMW and see what we can do with it.
Living the dream.
Exactly. Now, in this class, there's three KTMs at the race this year. We've got the 48 with Justin McMillan, Glenn Wood, Dean Lilly, Peter Major. The 50 with David Crampton, Trent Harrison, Tim Macro, Caitlin Wood. And the 71, Dean Cozzomides, Jake Parsons, James Winslow. Now, they're basically 11 Australian GT drivers, all very solid.
Right.
Apart from Jake Parsons, who's listed as Japanese for some reason.
That's just...
He's definitely Australian. But yeah, Jake Parsons, he's raced LMP2 and Asian Le Mans series. He's a very, very solid driver. Caitlin Wood was trying out for the W series recently. Yeah, so Caitlin Wood, she's raced KTMs overseas at places like Spa and whatnot. She did make the cut for the final round of W series. So she's a very... She's a very solid... So yeah, Caitlin Wood's very solid driver. And I reckon that car's probably the best of the three Jeanettes. Tim Macro as well, very solid Aussie lower-class driver. So I think the 71's probably your best KTM of those three. But the 50s are going to be well worth watching as well. Now we're on to the last class of this race, the Invitational class, which this year, as we've alluded to, is all Mark cars. And there's only four of them because they've sold a few off.
The question I wanted to ask, would you clarify for the international audience, what is actually Mark? Like, are they a kit builder? Are they a team? What are they?
So, Mark Australia, they're based out of the Gold Coast. They're basically kit car providers. They basically take a V8 engine and go, what can we shoehorn this into? So, they started out building a space frame, like a true frame chassis of a Ford Focus and put a V8 in that. And then they've done that with Mazdas as well. Basically, they're endurance kit cars is basically what they are. They'll build you a car, sell it, and away you go, have some fun. We've seen them in Creventic, we've seen them here. They're just a barrel of fun, and they sound phenomenal.
I want to try.
I want one. I'll put some sense in it, making a passenger vehicle. I want one. And some of the drivers hanging around in this class this year are phenomenal. So we'll go through the four cars. We've got the 20 of Hannah Hargreaves, Daniel Yielsen, Steve Owen, who is one of the most solid co-drivers you can get in V8 supercars. He just knows this place like no one else, like very few people do. And we'll put it, we'll drive it fast and drive it well. 91 with Keith Kasulki, who's actually a PNG driver.
Ah.
Paul Morris, Bathurst winner. Still cringe every time I say that. And Paul Tracy.
Dropping in from the heavens above.
I don't even know what he's... Why, what? It makes no sense, but it's pretty weird that he's here.
Hey, it's off-season, he's bored, he wants to get in the car.
As I understand it, this is Paul Morris made the phone call and said, hey, Paul, what are you doing? Okay, cool, coming down.
Yeah, pretty much.
I did hear that Boris said was potentially going to be in this car as well.
Nothing on the entry list yet?
No, he's the reason Paul Tracy is. Because Paul and Boris have raced together before. Paul called Boris and said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm busy. Do you want to call Paul Tracy instead? Okay.
All right.
That's pretty much how it came about. And since we recorded this show on Wednesday night, a change has been made to the entry list. Anton Di Pasquale is getting a go in this car now. Current V8 supercar driver in Class I. It's going to be fun to watch.
All right.
92, Jason Busk, Jeff Taunton, Dylan O'Keefe. Three Australian drivers, three fairly quick Australian drivers. And the 96, Hadrian Morrell, Elna Thorson, Matthias Backer. Only one Australian in that lineup, but again, not a bad lot of amateur drivers in there.
Yeah. So, we've got an IndyCar, I don't want to say legend, but definitely...
An IndyCar driver?
A former IndyCar driver, now pundit, mm-hmm. and controversial figure.
Yes, that's one way of putting it. Team
in the lowest class.
Yes.
That summarizes everything we've said so far.
Yeah.
I mean, the race is absolutely stacked, and it's going to be a treat to watch.
Yeah, teamed with Paul Morris. So if that car makes a finish, I'll be very surprised.
Good point.
My pick for that class is the 20.
Mm.
So if you're getting your fantasy picks in, there you go. So that about wraps this bad boy up. We should talk about some of the other action this week, because as Flood mentioned, it's going over 4 days this year. We've got a massive support class. We've got Formula Fords back at Bathurst, which is phenomenal for me.
Yeah. Are they the only single-seaters to race at Bathurst?
Single-seaters used to race here all the time.
Do they?
Yeah. That's great to see super single-seaters back here. Radicals, they normally have 2 45-minute races or three of them. They're absolutely great fun to watch as well. Little prototype things just go phenomenal around here. Group N sports cars. So that's your... I'm pretty sure that's your oldest spec. I think the other one was sports touring cars, wasn't it? Your combined sedans. Now, combined sedans...
That's
a fun class.
I was going to ask. What the hell? I looked up combined sedans, and I was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, basically...
So, fill me out.
Okay. So, there's 55 cars this year for combined sedans.
Wow.
The first thing you need to... If you just look at the image on the Bathurst Clubhouse website, there's an old V8 supercar being trailed by what looks like an old Mazda Trans Am. Mm. So, okay, I'll go through some of the cars you get. Chevy Camaro, Holden Tirana, Ford Falcon, Holden Commodore, Holden Monaro, the new one, Mini Cooper, BMW E30, Mazda RX-8, BMW 130i, Mustang, Mitsubishi Evo. This is so Skyline. It's
basically production cars.
It's basically bring whatever you want and have a run.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah.
It's basically legal street racing.
Basically, yeah. So that's always fun to watch. Okay, it might not be the most competitive racing in the world, but it's also always just a lot of fun to watch. And if you want to watch it,
yeah,
it's really easy to. If you're living somewhere that's not Australia, the easiest way to watch it is on YouTube. And because KCMG are bringing the Nismo, Nismo TV is streaming the whole thing.
Yay.
And it'll also be available on Blank Plane channels as well. If you are in Australia, all coverage will be live on TV on Sunday. And I believe they'll be covering the Saturday shootout as well. That'll be on 7 Mate, I believe. So, track action starts on Sunday nice and early at 5:30 a.m. local time.
Yeah, green at 5:45.
Mm-hmm.
And local time is 11 hours ahead of London at the moment.
Yes, or 20 years ahead of London. On that note, thank you for joining me today, Sol. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here.
Yeah, let's get hyped.
Let's get hyped as Bathurst, baby.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate, and enjoy the race, everybody. We'll see you next time for the next episode, which will be hopefully when Flood gets back and they can actually run the show properly. But until then, we'll see you next time.
Okay, I've got some notes, but yeah. All right. Oops, today on Jewish chat. A European tries to understand Australian culture.
It's gonna be like top gear intro. A Kiwi tonight. Tonight on Endurance Chat. A Kiwi tries to host a show and fails miserably. Zoom. A European tries to understand Australian motorsport. Vroom. And Flood is somewhere in the country. Who knows where? Who cares? Vroom.
Oh, what?